Merkle Media.
Oh, Ashback Fridays on Macroaggressions. We're going back to April 8th, 2020, episode number 11, Bullets and Ballots. If you're interested in converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency into tangible assets like silver and gold, you can go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold. Talk to Tony Arterburn at Wise Wolf, and he will hook you up. Now, enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Swangled in
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome, everybody, to the show. My name is Charlie Robinson. I know you've got a lot of options out there of podcasts to listen to, so I certainly do appreciate you taking the time to check us out. This episode, we're going to talk about bullets and ballot boxes. We've got the elections coming up in the United States in the next, 10 months or so. And as usual, it's going to be insane. We're going to have the usual cast of lunatics spending $1 billion to get $1 million a year job and doing that with money given to them by special interest to promote their policies once they get put in office. What could possibly go wrong, right? So, but first, I want to say that if anyone wants to check out my work, you can go to theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can check me out on Facebook /theoctopusofglobalcontrol. And you can find me on Twitter at Moefus, Moewefus. And if you're wondering where that name came from, that's just the stupid name that my buddies and I used to use when we were right out of college to call each other. It's like a term that you would call each other idiots. You would just say, shut up, Moefus. So, hey, it turned into a good Twitter handle because nobody else obviously has it. Let's just jump right in to one of the most polarizing topics, I think, and that is gun control, Second Amendment, things like that. Boy, I'll tell you what, I can see both sides of this issue. There is a there's a saying that, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people, and that is true. Of course, they are using an instrument to conduct their terror, right? And that is a gun. And like many things, you know, a gun is just a tool, right? A tool in the hand of a good person. It can be used for good things. A tool in the hand of somebody that has evil intent. Even a pencil could be a weapon in the hands of the wrong person. But there's this tendency to think that gun control, the removal of guns, will bring about peace and it will eliminate the violence that happens inside a society. And I guess theoretically that's true. If you removed all guns from all people. But that's not what happens. That's not what's really being called for in the push for gun control. And when you dig deeper into it, what you find is that the people pushing the agenda trying to control the guns aren't trying to do so because they want to stop the spread of senseless violence. I mean, the people that are pushing the agenda are from the government. Nobody spreads more senseless violence than the government. So they're not trying to remove guns from people because they are a concerned and loving government wanting to make sure that all the people stay alive and free from oppression. That's the cover story, but that's, of course, not even close to the reason why gun control is being pushed in the United States in particular. But I mean, I think the first logical question is, you know, what's so wrong with trying to control guns, especially considering how many deaths are actually attributed to them? And that's a very reasonable question. And it's difficult to argue against it. It would be great if we could be assured that by doing this, by not having a gun, that it would solve the problem. But that's not the case, because the government isn't talking about removing guns from the military. The police aren't talking about removing guns from their holsters. The politicians that talk to you about gun control are not disarming their private security force that's with them. There's none of that going on. It's disarmament for you, but not disarmament for them. And you have to be a certain kind of stupid if you trust that your government is going to protect you from violence once you remove the guns from the people. That's just not going to happen. First of all, I mean, the most obvious argument is that when you make guns illegal and you make a gun-free zone, that criminals don't care. They're criminals by definition. Therefore, the fact of owning an illegal gun is not a barrier that they're unwilling to cross. They don't have a problem with that. They're criminals. Law-abiding people, they see a law preventing guns, and because they are law-abiding, they say, oh, well, I won't have a gun then, because that's against the law. Well, what it does is it creates a large percentage of the population that is unarmed, and a very small percentage of the population that is armed. And the people that are armed are military, police, and criminals. And I think a case can be made that all three of those fit the same label, which is criminals, right? Let me just clarify. I'm not saying all cops are criminals. I am saying that there is a large percentage of them that are. That's proven by statistics. You can watch your nightly news. Not that I trust the nightly news. You can watch plenty of videos showing outrageous police behavior, whether they're choking people out or shooting them 2 seconds after they arrive on the scene. The police being armed should not set anybody's mind at ease, because they continue to be part of the problem. And part of this book that I wrote, The Octopus of Global Control, the format is that I bring in quotes from over 500 different people that had an interesting view on some of these important events in human history. So interesting view doesn't necessarily always mean that you are a firsthand witness to it. It can mean that you are just somebody that has an interesting take on things. So, as an example, how about Chris Rock, comedian? He said, gun control, we need bullet control. I think every bullet should cost $5,000, because if a bullet costs $5,000, we wouldn't have any innocent bystanders. Yeah, that's ain't that the truth? But I think the problem is that most honest people would turn over their guns if they were asked to, especially if they thought that by doing so, they would somehow, you know, be preventing a gun tragedy. But when people are ordered to turn over their guns, it becomes a very, very different story. Because like I said, you know who won't be turning in their guns? The military, the police, the criminals, You know, so you have a bunch of unarmed people versus armed criminals and armed military. Yeah, you know, that's not gonna end well. And you know, you look back on the history of government, not the United States government necessarily, but just governments around the world. And what you notice is that the number one killer of people over the last 100 years was their own government. The estimates for it are staggering. We've 144 million people over the last century died at the hands of their own government. That's according to statistics from Death by Government. So let me just read some of these numbers. And the numbers are so large. In fact, Joseph Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. And he's right. And he should know, too, because topping this list, 61,911,000 murdered by the Soviet Gulag state, 35,236,000 murdered by Mao's communist China. And by the way, I've heard that number reported as closer to 60 million itself. So we're going with the conservative estimate of 35, you know, only 35 million. 20,947,000 murdered by the Nazi Third Reich. 10,214,000 murdered by what they called the depraved nationalist regime, which is China. 5,964,000 murdered by Japan's savage military. These are the, by the way, these are the titles that they're given. It's not my term. 2,035,000 murdered by the Khmer Rouge hell state. 1,883,000 murdered by Turkey's genocidal purges. 1,670,000 murdered by the Vietnamese war state. Another 1,585,000 murdered in Poland's ethnic cleansing. 1.5 million murdered by the Pakistani cutthroat state, which is crazy because I had never even heard of that. And you're talking about 1.5 million people being murdered by a group that doesn't get almost any airplay at all. A little over a million murdered by Tito's slaughterhouse. 1.6 million murdered by North Korea. 1.4 million murdered by what they called barbarous Mexico. And a little over a million murdered by feudal Russia. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about, let's round up, round down. When we're talking about percentage points here, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of lives if we're just rounding up to the nearest, you know, 100,000. This is insanity. But this is what happens. This is exactly what, this is why I titled this chapter, you register and ban the firearms before the slaughter, which is a quote from Mao. Yeah. You know why you do that? So that the population isn't armed and can't fight back. I mean, that's just common sense. But, you know, there's a tendency to discount this, you know, to think that it happens. It's happening in another country, or it happened in, you know, 50 years ago. That happened 50 years ago. That happened in China, and they're crazy in China. That's a different sort of society. That won't happen here. Well, you know, they didn't think it was going to happen to them as well. You know, when they were being rounded up in Poland in the late 30s and dragged out of their house and shot in the head by the Einsatzgruppen, they didn't think that was real. Until they're standing in a ditch next to guys from their neighborhood, and they look and notice and see the line of Nazis ready to shoot them in the head. And then they cover them up with sand and bring the new batch in the same ditch and shoot them in the head. And it just happens over and over and over again. And I'm not trying to bum everybody out, but this is the reality of it. You know, one day you're alive and, you know, 15 minutes later, you're dead. And that's just the way it was. And this can happen in the United States. It's very tempting to get lulled into a false sense of security, or what they call normalcy bias, where just because today was a normal day, just because today was, you know, you went to the grocery store and picked up your kids from school and everything was the way it should be, that there's an assumption that tomorrow will be like that as well. And you know what? Tomorrow will probably be like that as well. But it doesn't mean that it necessarily will. And we've seen these things spiral out of control in these countries. And the common thread is that before you go about slaughtering a large percentage of your population, you have to disarm them. And part of this is where you get this debate about the Second Amendment. Now, I want to just interject a little bit of personal history for me. And that is, I don't like guns. I'm pro Second Amendment. I'm for people to have the right to have guns and everything like that. I just don't personally like them. When I was about to turn 8 years old, day before my 8th birthday, I was in a car with my mom at a mall. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right after school, parked at the mall. My mom said, stay in the car. I'm going to run into the store. I need to get something. It's for your birthday. You can't be with me. You can't see it. I'll be back in 15 minutes. Just hang out here. And I did. And as my mom was walking back to the car, two men walked up alongside of her. One on my side of the car in the passenger side, one on my mom's side of the car. As soon as she unlocked her door, the guy pulled a gun, put it to her head, said, move over or I'll blow your brains out in front of me. I watched this. I've got one guy kneeled down on my side, passenger side, trying to open my door. And I've got the other guy with a gun to my mom's head, putting her in the driver's side of our car, intending to push her over so that he could get in and take the car and let his buddy in and take us off somewhere and shoot us. And my mom resisted. She hit the car horn. She slammed the door on these guys. And the guys put the gun away, quickly walked off in different directions in the mall parking lot. This is in Laguna Hills, California, right around, I think it was 1980. And so I saw that. The guys were caught the next day. They were Marines. They were from the El Toro Marine Base. I had to pick them out of a police lineup like you do in those movies that you see where they've got them lined up in the bright light and you're behind two-way mirror. And I had to say, that was the guy that put the gun to my mom's head. So I don't like guns. Okay. And I don't feel safe necessarily that the military has guns, because those guys were Marines. Okay. And they went to prison for that. But I also don't like the idea of the government showing up, dragging people out of their house, taking them to a ravine, and shooting them in the head. And that happens when you disarm the population. And so it's important for us to recognize that, yeah, right now in America, you know, we've got some gun violence, but we don't have the military operating in the streets, or we don't have a foreign military operating in the streets, dragging people out of their homes and shooting them, because we got a lot of guns. And geographically, the way the United States is set up, it kind of prevents invasion, unless you're talking about Canada or Mexico. And I think a case can be made that there has been an invasion, but that's a topic for another time. The way we're set up is we're sort of protected by, in a sense, from external forces. But that is not to say that we are protected from internal forces working against our best interest. And so, you know, Mao Zedong said in 1938, all political power comes from the barrel of a gun. You register and ban the firearms before the slaughter. And then, of course, that is exactly what he went on to do. Like I said, the numbers, these statistics showed 35 million other statistics show 50 million. I've seen them as high as 70 million for this. You know, we're talking about numbers that are very difficult to comprehend. And, but these were real people. And what did they do wrong? They committed the cardinal sin of opposing their government or not being thought of by their government as being the right type of people, or subversive, which is a very vague term that can apply to shit, me for one, probably anybody listening to this, anybody seeking out information that is contrary to the traditional flow of information, the traditional stories that, you know, guns are bad, we've got to get rid of guns, we have to pass more gun laws. Look, I'm not in favor of criminals having guns. I'm not in favor of you being able to buy a gun from a vending machine. I understand that there has to be some sort of, you know, there has to be, we're talking about a dangerous item, but spare me when the government is going to be the arbiter of who is worthy of owning a firearm and who is not, because they have proven themselves to be completely irresponsible and psychotic when it comes to their own use of firearms and weapons. So, you know, I'm not really willing to listen to them when they talk about how they need to get rid of the guns for us because it's for our own safety. Because when you listen to the rulers that have gone on to slaughter all of their people, you know, they're very upfront about how it works. Here is Adolf Hitler in 1942. The most foolish mistake we could possibly make would be to allow the subject races to possess arms. History shows that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms have prepared their own downfall by so doing. So the Nazis established gun control in 1938, and between 1939 and 1945, an estimated 13 million people who were unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. It's unknown how many captured soldiers were executed during World War II, but estimates put that in the multi-million range as well. So you've got guys like Mao talking about it. You have Adolf Hitler talking about it. Here's Joseph Stalin, 1929. This is well before World War II. If the opposition disarms, well and good. If it refuses to disarm, we shall disarm it ourselves. So the Soviet Union established gun control from that point, 1929, all the way through 1953. And only about 20 million dissidents were rounded up and executed. So, and by the time you got to 1987, that figure had climbed to almost 62 million people. 62 million people. I have no idea how to quantify that, except to say it's about a quarter of the population of the United States. So if you went into a movie theater, think about one out of every four people being rounded up, taken to a gulag, and either worked to death or shot in the head. That's what happens when you have governments that think like this, that put themselves up on a pedestal and everybody else down at the bottom, that in order to preserve their authority and to keep themselves in power, they must murder everybody else. I mean, clearly, that's an unbelievable mentality to have, but it is not, it is tempting to think that that is only for those psychopathic rulers like Stalin and Mao and Hitler and Pol Pot and guys like that. But this is a mentality that is pervasive through government. And the reason is because you find the same types of people floating into the government world, psychopathic mass murderers, sociopaths that want to control people. They find themselves in these positions of power. They're like moths attracted to the flame of power. Psychopaths love that. It's how they control, you know, the ability to control people is what gets them off. In part, not the only thing, but their ability to then control larger and larger groups of people is what, you know, drives them into positions, you know, police, government, military. These are all organizations where one person can instruct millions of people to do something. That is a that's a very attractive proposition for psychopaths. And so, so history is littered with these examples of psychopathic rulers that talk about how they want to, how the strategy for control comes through disarmament first. So all of those Second Amendment fans, those don't tread on me sticker people that are, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, those guys are crazy. You know, let's better keep an eye on them and their guns. And well, hey, man, what do you need a gun for? Like when they wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and all that stuff, they're talking about protecting themselves from bears. Well, no, they were talking about protecting themselves from tyrannical government. And I would say that never has there been the opportunity for a tyrannical government to take over the population than what we're witnessing right now. So is the gun control debate going to fall off? No, absolutely not. You better be prepared to hear about the push for gun control from today until the day you die, because it will always be a topic of discussion. And there will always be a push towards disarmament, because that's how governments think. It's the group think of government, that they have to stay. Once you become a part of the government, you want to stay in control. And the thing that you worry about the most are the people rising up against you. And if the people rising up against you have torches and pitchforks, you can deal with that. But if they all have guns, then you've got a problem, because yeah, you've got the military, and yeah, you could probably take out most of them, but there's going to be a fight. They're going to put up a fight. And if we've learned one thing since Vietnam, we have learned that when the people stand up against the American military, be it in Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever, the military gets dragged into these quagmires where they can't fight. They can't fight guerrilla tactics with their traditional methods. You wind up in Vietnam and you show up with tanks. What good are the tanks? you brought a tank to a helicopter fight. You know, you brought tanks to a fight where people are walking single file down the Ho Chi Minh Trail and digging underground bunkers to hide there. Tanks don't work. You know, so the governments, especially the United States government, has found themselves in situations where guerrilla forces, meaning the people, you know, guerrilla forces, the people who are defending themselves after being invaded by the U.S. Military, those insurgents, those terrorists, right? Those are the people that would be us in this scenario, where the government decides to come in and take us down, to take the insurgents that are talking about, you know, those crazy things like freedom and Second Amendment and stay out of my business and all that stuff. These people can't be allowed to exist like us. They have to get rid of us. So what would they do? They would come for you. They would try to disarm you. And what we have seen over the past couple of years is that every now and then, the American people stand up for themselves. You saw that with the Bundy Ranch thing, where the government stepped in and got involved with the Bundys and started trying to put them in jail. And then a bunch of armed militiamen showed up. Now we're starting to see that in Virginia with Governor Northam talking about imposing red flag laws and things like that. This is always going to be sold as a benefit to the masses of people, meaning the government is going to come in and remove guns from these crazy people so that they can't hurt you. How is the government going to do that? They're going to do it with guns, right? Like the irony is lost on them. The fact that for gun control, to remove guns from people, the military and the police are going to use guns. Sounds a bit hypocritical, doesn't it? Never mind that. That's what they're going to use. So, Cambodia established gun control in 1956. And between 1975 and 1979, over 2 million people educated people, people that were doctors, lawyers, teachers, the educated people, were round up and shot. That's 4 years. That works out to 500,000 people a year just in Cambodia, a small country, a country of, I don't know, I think it was like maybe 8 million people. I think they killed 1 out of 4 people in Cambodia during that time. And this is the Killing Fields, if you've ever seen that movie. And this is the Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge. Technically the number works out to 31%. They murdered 31% of the entire population. For what? Because they wanted to get rid of the educated people, because the educated people could see through the bullshit. And the educated people were sounding the alarm saying, hey, this government is tyrannical. We have to stand up to this. And so what did they do? They disarmed them, then they murdered them. And it might sound apocalyptic to bring that up to Americans, because we have this fantasy that we're Americans and therefore we're sort of magically protected from all this nonsense that happens around the world. But that is not the case. So understand this. If they disarm you, what comes next is they murder you. And I know that sounds crazy. It sounds crazy to believe that. It sounds crazy to say it even. But look at history. This is what happens. Think of what's going through somebody's mind as they're being dragged out of their home and taken down the street with all these other people that they know and being lined up and shot. Think of what's going through their head. Obviously, besides a bullet that's about to go through their head. They've got to be saying, this can't be happening. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe I'm going to die. I can't believe I'm about to die. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm going to be dead in 5 seconds. But this is real. This has been the ending of somebody's life for 144 million people that have had the same end to their life. They probably thought this can't be happening to them as well. It's the last thought that goes through their mind. It's horrific, and it's haunting, of course, but we need to understand this, because if we're pretending that this can't happen, or that, you know, that this is somehow happens to them but not to us, then we are setting ourselves up for disaster. We're putting ourselves in a situation where we are asking to be deceived, and we are asking for a very dangerous outcome. Let's take a break from the show just for a minute so I can tell you about our sponsors, Scribd. If you are into audiobooks or ebooks or magazines or anything, you have got to get this service. It's $9.99 a month. You can join free for 30 days and cancel whenever you want. You have unlimited access to thousands of books. You got books on conspiracies, books on UFOs, JFK, Bigfoot, whatever you're into, they've got them there, not to mention all the magazines. It's 33% cheaper than Audible. You got access to more audiobooks from major publishers. They're unlimited. You can listen to or read as much as you want. The link for Scribd is in the description box below. Anything that you sign up for with them helps to benefit the show, and we certainly do appreciate that. And if you're into ebooks and audiobooks like I am, then you're probably also into documentaries. And CuriosityStream is our other sponsor. They have thousands of documentaries. They're award-winning, they're exclusives, they have originals. You can watch them anytime you want, anywhere you want. High definition quality, unlimited streaming of thousands of shows. You can stream it on your laptop, your TV, your phone, your tablet. You can even watch it offline if you want. Yearly subscription, $19.99. If you break it down to a month, they've got it for $2.99 a month. That's nothing. If you like it in high definition 4K, they also have that available for a little bit more. So the link to CuriosityStream is also in the description box. Take a look. sign up for these services if you like them and you stick with them. Our show benefits from it. We certainly do appreciate that. I like these two sponsors a great deal because they're both in the business of providing us with additional information from a variety of sources. And you've got to love that. Thank you so much for supporting my show, and thanks for supporting the sponsors as well. William Cooper, who is the author of Behold a Pale Horse, he said in his book in 1991, "The government encouraged the manufacture and importation of military firearms for the criminals to use. This is intended to foster a feeling of insecurity, which would lead the American people to voluntarily disarm themselves by passing laws against firearms. Using drugs and hypnosis on mental patients in a process called Orion, the CIA inculcated the desire in these people to open fire on schoolyards and thus inflame the anti-gun lobby. This plan is well underway and is so far working perfectly. The middle class is begging the government to do away with the Second Amendment." So he wrote that in 1991 about the school shootings. We might want to listen to what old Bill Cooper had to say. I mean, he did call 9/11 3 months before it happened. He did say that there's going to be an event and they're going to blame it on Osama bin Laden. He said that flat out. and that was in June of 2001. Obviously, it happened in September of 2001. He was dead by December of 2001 in a shootout with police when they say he went for a gun. So, you know, Bill Cooper's talking about how this was pushed into existence through the CIA. You know, now, if this is the first time you're hearing the CIA being involved in nefarious things, you might be tempted to discount that. But the evidence of CIA involvement in things like this is deep. If you look at the rash of school shootings, Sandy Hook and Parkland and you know, things like this, what you'll find is that it has intelligence agency fingerprints all over it. None of them are as they appear to be. I'm not saying that they're all fake. I'm saying that there's hybrids of them, that that the CIA and FBI and Department of Homeland Security and FEMA are all involved in these. They're involved in these events. They have prior knowledge. There's a lot more to it. And part of that is because this is exactly what Bill Cooper was talking about, as using school shootings and stoking this fear as a way to push people to demand that their guns are taken away. You know, this is the best way to do it. If you're a government, you can go in there and tell everyone we're taking your guns away, and that'll be effective for a large chunk of the population. But there will be a lot of pushback from, obviously, the hardcore gun fans, but also the people that are sort of on the fence. They'll be like, wait a second, I'm not so sure if I'm on board with this. But if you do it differently, if you create emotional reactions, problem reaction, solution, problem. We've got a problem with gun violence in schools. Reaction. Oh my God, we can't have another gun. We can't have another Sandy Hook. We can't have another Parkland. We can't have this. Solution. We're going to remove guns. We're going to remove guns from people that have been visiting a psychiatrist in the last 10 years. We're going to create red flag laws that allow you to rat out your neighbor if you think that your neighbor might be unstable, and then have the police show up to take their guns away from them. That's dangerous. It's dangerous for the police officers. It's dangerous for all of us, because what's to say that your neighbor can't have some problem with you because you leave your trash can out at the curb too long, and then next thing you know, he's making a call to the police saying that he thinks that you might be psychotic, and he saw you one time out there waving a gun around, and the police show up at your house, take all your guns. You don't know what's going on. You don't know why they're called. You just see a bunch of people showing up. Next thing you know, you're being held in a psychiatric facility on a 72-hour hold while they go through and comb through your social media records and see if you've ever said anything that seems kind of anti-government. And boom, they just slap that on you, take your guns away from you. If you're lucky, they do that. If you're lucky, that's all they do. Maybe they take your kids away from you. I mean, so this is a very slippery slope. But if you remember, and if you understand that the government's goal is to protect themselves, then you understand that they will do just about anything to make sure that that happens. And it's a very unusual way to look at things. When the government is supposed to be of the people and by the people and for the people, but the government's biggest enemy in their eyes are the people. That's who they're really scared of, because they understand that that we outnumber them 1,000,000 to 1, and you know, it creates a problem. They've got the guns, we've got the numbers. And as Vladimir Lenin said, one man with a gun can control 100 without one. And that's obviously true. But when you have these gun control debates, and they happen all the time, it's just very difficult to take the government's case seriously, because they're so hypocritical in that the United States government is the largest arms sales company in the world. Nobody sells more weapons than the United States to a variety of countries and governments, and they don't give a shit if those governments are despotic, you know, lunatic regimes like Saudi Arabia. Who buys more weapons from the United States than Saudi Arabia? Nobody does. Here's a quote from Denver Knicks Time magazine. This is from December in 2015. The United States remains the world's preeminent exporter of arms, with more than 50% of the global weaponry market controlled by the United States as of 2014. Arms sales by the United States jumped 35%, or nearly $10 billion, to $36.2 billion in 2014, according to Congressional Research Service report, which analyzed the global arms market between 2007 and 2014. So, you know, this is it's hypocritical for Obama, when he was president, to come out and talk about Sandy Hook and talk about how we have to make sure that these gun tragedies don't happen, while he's simultaneously selling more weapons to foreign countries than any president in the history of the world. So, and of course, that has been now been exceeded by Trump, who has gone on to sell weapons to regimes all around the world. So spare me the lecture on how guns are bad and how we need to get rid of guns when Obama or Trump show up to these events surrounded by armed security guards, fresh off of facilitating another multi-billion dollar arms deal to some foreign country so that they can do God knows what with them. If you're Saudi Arabia, you're taking missiles sold to you by the United States, made by Lockheed Martin, and blowing the shit out of Yemen and creating a epidemic in Yemen where 10 million people are dying of starvation there. But you're going to lecture me about having a gun, or you can't have an AR-15, or you have an assault. Oh, we have to ban assault rifles. You mean like the assault rifles that you just sold to Saudi Arabia? You mean we have to ban those? So we can't have those. But these dictatorships can. Oh, okay. All right. I just want to be clear, right? So guns are bad when the people have them, but the same guns are good when Kingdom of Saudi Arabia gets them, or Israel, or the UK, or the United States military, for that matter. So it's just difficult to listen to the lectures from these politicians, or David Hogg, who's a fucking joke, you know, or these people that talking about how we're the problem with our guns. Like I said, I don't like guns. I don't like the idea of them. But I have to deal with the current reality. And the current paradigm is that guns exist and they're everywhere. And a lot of people have them. And by taking them away from good people, you put good people in a position where they are defenseless against bad people. It's just, it really just kind of boils down to something as simple as that. And this gun control debate is going to go on for a long, long time. It's going to make people fight with one another. And I wish we could just wave a magic wand and all the guns and bombs and missiles went away. But you know what would happen? Then people would kill each other with staplers. You know what I mean? Or, you know, baseball bats or whatever. You know, there's something in our genetics that make us, you know, violent. And so we've created these tools, and there's a saying that, you know, we used to create weapons to fight wars. Now we create wars to sell weapons. You know, that unfortunately is the reality of the situation that we've found ourselves in. And part of the reason for that is that you have an inordinate amount of influence in Washington by the military-industrial complex. You have generals that leave the military and get cushy jobs with Raytheon, where they're paid, you know, $75,000 a month to be a consultant. And what do? Well, they go on MSNBC and talk about how the question is, do we go into Iran tomorrow or the following week or the following month? But the option of us never going into Iran isn't considered. It's just not a topic that gets discussed because they control the narrative. And the narrative is war, war, war. When are we going to go start a new war? And how much, you know, and under the guise of spreading democracy, of course, or humanitarian aid missions, things like that. When are we going to do the next one? And you wonder why this just keeps getting pushed over and over and over again. And the answer is that when you've got a news organization, say like NBC, with a parent company, General Electric, what you need to know is that General Electric is also a military contractor. And they make products that are used in war. They make products that are used in bombs. They make guidance systems. They make all kinds of things that you've never even heard of, or you'd never even think about. So there's a vested interest in these media conglomerates always pushing for war because they're part of much larger parent companies that have stakes in war industries. And what better way to convince people to keep buying these widgets that they're producing than to use their media influence to always talk about war, never talk about peace, just keep pushing it more and more and more. And then we'll bring in these generals to comment with the talking head morons at MSNBC. They'll drag some guy in and say, "General, talk to us about, you know, where do we go from here? What does this look like? What does this lead up to around, you know, a war with Iran look like? Or what can we do to prevent these terrorists in Syria? Well, you know, what we need to do is we need to cut them off here, and we need to bomb this, and we need to get rid of these people there." "Oh, that's interesting. Why do you say that?" "Oh, well, I say that because I'm financed by Lockheed Martin, and I work for them." "Oh, I don't tell anybody that." Of course, you know, so I'm being facetious. They don't ever tell anybody that that's who they're working for. But when you see these people on your nightly news, when you see John fucking Brennan on television trying to talk to you about democracy and spreading people, and you don't connect the dots that this guy was the head of the CIA and one of the biggest criminals running the planet, you know, running around on the planet. You know, these are the wrong people to come in and give you an objective take on this. Funny, I CNN never reaches out to me to come on and have me on as an analyst to talk about the potentials of these future wars. Why? Well, besides the fact that CNN is a joke of an organization, the real answer is that they don't want people that are anti-war on there talking about other options because they don't want us thinking about that. They are in the business of selling weapons, and the media is involved in that. So the gun control conversation that we have is you know, it's framed by people that have a vested interest in keeping us unaware of the true nature of this discussion. This nature, the discussion of gun control is beyond just should you be allowed to buy a handgun at a gun show, and it goes into much deeper things. Talking about, you know, removing, you know, you're talking about removing our rights, but they frame it in a way, and they use every tool at their disposal, from manufactured school shootings to the crazy guy that goes, you know, and gets a gun and shoots up a church or a synagogue or something like that. You know, there's always, you know, the media can't wait for an event like that because it allows them to generate ratings, and it allows them to push an agenda that is part of what their corporate overlords, with their parent companies, really want, in conjunction with the government, of course, what they really want them talking about, or more importantly, not talking about too. So there is the, you know, the control of the narrative through the omission of certain topics that you're not allowed to talk about. It's very dirty, but this is how it works. I hope that when people, you know, hear these gun control debates, they realize that there's a couple different aspects of it that we need to really talk about. And I think that, you know, when you mention to somebody, hey, listen, I don't want them disarming us all, because I don't want the government to all be the only ones with the guns, governments and criminals, be the only ones with the guns, because if that's the case, then there's nothing to stop them from rounding us all up and shooting us. And you say that to somebody at a truck stop somewhere, and they will think that you are out of your fucking mind, that you are a full-blown tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorist. But the reality of the situation is that is always how it starts with these slaughters. And it may not happen in the United States. They could disarm the population and then not round up a bunch of millions of people and shoot them. But I wouldn't hold my breath on that. And I certainly wouldn't want to bet on that, because that is a huge gamble, especially when you look at history and it is littered with examples of psychopathic governments doing just that. So yes, you might sound a bit off your rocker to talk about how governments are liable to slaughter their own people once they're disarmed. But you would not be inaccurate by bringing up that point. In fact, that is a point that is well worth discussing, because that's just looking back at history, man. That's not, you know, speculating on pulling things out of your ass for no good reason. This is just, hey, let's take a look at what's happened in the past and maybe project that forward to see what could be in our future. Like I said, it's no guarantee. It doesn't mean that it absolutely will happen, but that is the first step that always happens before the slaughter. And maybe, you know, when somebody like Mao, who is telling you that's the plan, that you register the firearms before the slaughter, that might be another example of, let's listen to some of these people, because they're telling you how they think, and they don't think like you and me. They think like something else. They think like a monster, like a psychopath. And so it's fascinating, on the one hand, to kind of hear their thoughts. But of course, it's also shedding light on the way they think, and it allows you to kind of go down that path and think, well, I don't know that this way of thinking is necessarily limited to guys like Mao and Hitler and Stalin. Those are the best known. Those are the names that kind of scream at you. But I'm not so sure that if George H.W. Bush didn't have the Americans completely disarmed, that he wouldn't have been the one to institute something like that. I mean, Bill Clinton put more black people in prison under his omnibus crime bill than anybody else. What's to stop him from the next step, which is shooting everybody that he doesn't like? It sounds crazy, of course, but we're talking about the same personality traits in guys like the Bushes and the Clintons and Obama that you find in guys like Stalin and Mao. They find themselves in a position of power. They work their whole lives to get to a position of power, and once they get there, they want to stay there. That's not, you know, that's how they think. That's how you would think if you were the type of person that sought an unbelievable, disproportionate amount of power like these guys work their whole lives to acquire. They're not going to give it up that easily. Of course, in the United States, we're sort of have this system of elections that produce a new person every 4 years, theoretically, maybe 8 years, depending on re-elections. But this is put in there as some sort of failsafe to keep a dictator from running the, you know, the country forever. But that's just the disguise. The election system is obviously, it's just the disguise, because the real people that are running this are above the presidents. The presidents come and go. There's what they call the permanent state. And those are the people that are above the politicians that never change, or they're parts of the intelligence agencies that sort of presidential, you know, presidents come and go, but the intelligence agencies maintain, they continue along. So the elections come into play as this sort of democratic face that's slapped on this circus of government. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, they're giving us two choices. 2016, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. These are our two choices. I mean, this is an embarrassment of epic proportions, that you have the choice between an Oompa Loompa and a lumpy lunatic. You know, we can't do better than this. We can't do better. I mean, we can't find somebody. You'd have better representation in government if you went down to local Costco and dragged the cashier out and threw them in office, because at least then you might have a chance at having somebody that is an interest in preserving the rights of the people. If you've got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as your two choices, you're fucked. Your interests are no longer being represented at all. And if you think that they are, or you think that Donald Trump is coming to save you, this Cheeto face on this white horse, you're delusional. You don't understand history. You're being misled if you think that. If you think that these people are coming to save you, they don't work for you. People say that government is broken. It's not broken. It is working exactly the way it was designed. It is set up by the people in the ruling class to give you the illusion that you have freedom and control, and that you have the right to pick your leaders, and you have all that stuff. It is all a gigantic charade. It is a distraction. It is fake. It is fake news. These people don't work for you. They don't give a shit about you. God, just watch any George Carlin special. He will lay it out in a way that makes so much sense that you will feel stupid for not recognizing it earlier. They don't give a shit about you. They just don't, because they don't work for you. They work for the people that put them in office. When you borrow $1 billion, when you have Citizens United, which opens up the floodgates to campaign finance from external forces, from external companies, when you can put as much money into government through these corporations as you want, then you are not represented anymore. You just aren't. And to think otherwise is wishful thinking and a bit of delusion. You know, I mean, yes, they are horrible people doing despicable things to us in government, but we have to take some responsibility for our own actions here. I mean, we have to acknowledge that there is a game being played that we are not sort of involved in, or we don't get to set up the rules. We think we do. We think we've set this up in a way where every 4 years we get to pick a new leader to come in and do the things that we want them to do. That is not happening. And if you're not seeing that, then you really need to wake up to it. It should be obvious by now that the people in Congress, in the United States Congress, you know, they're grifters and con men. Nancy Pelosi is worth $100 million. She's been in government her whole life. How does that happen? Well, because insider trading is legal and allowed, for one, and they funnel deals to their, in her case, her husband. But it's not. This is not to say that Nancy Pelosi is the only person involved in this. I mean, look at the Bidens. Look at this. I mean, people are starting to get a sense of, oh shit, Hunter Biden is on the board of Burisma, a Ukrainian oil and gas. So, did Hunter Biden go to school for? You know, is he a geologist? No, he's a crackhead. He's a crackhead with an $87,000 a month job for Burisma Holdings in Ukraine. You know, Ukraine, where he went to college. Oh, wait, no, he didn't go to college. Yeah, you know, where he lived there for... Oh, yeah, no, he didn't live there. What the fuck is he doing on the board? I'll tell you what he's doing on the board. It's obvious to anybody with a brain. He is there because he is the son of Vice President Joe Biden. Period. End of story. Anybody tries to tell you anything other than that is delusional. That is why he's there. He doesn't have experience in oil and gas. He doesn't know Ukraine. Okay. He's just a jackass, a crack smoking, stripper loving, dating the wife of his dead brother, scumbag, reprehensible, possible lizard person that is involved in politics. Welcome to American politics. This is how it happens. This is how it works. Everything is working exactly as it's supposed to. This corruption that you're seeing is part of it. This is how the system is set up. It is not broken. It is functioning just fine. Everything about it is working the way it is meant to work. We, unfortunately, see this as some sort of flaw in the system because we are delusional and we think that the system is set up to work for us. And it ain't, okay? I'm sorry. It just is not. This is how the system works. In the United States, you know, we go to the voting booth every 4 years and then we, you know, push the button, pull the lever, whatever, and vote for the new person. But listen to the words of some of these people that quite rightly see this exercise for what it really is, which is just a total sham. Emma Goldman, anarchist known for political activism, said, if elections were that effective, they'd be illegal. Yeah, no kidding. And then you've got Doug Casey, who's an author, a libertarian philosopher, financial guy. And he said, democracy is no solutions, just 51% bossing around the other 49%. For God's sake, Hitler was democratically elected. Democracy is just mob rule dressed up in a coat and tie. Yeah, it is. You know, H.L. Mencken, who is an American journalist, and by the way, I quote this guy in the book a lot because he was hilarious. He said, every election is a sort of advanced auction sale of stolen goods. It's totally true. It's totally true. Why would you go about doing business the normal way when all you really have to do is spend that money and buy politicians and then they can rig the game in a way that benefits you, your company, your industry, whatever. That's what lobbying is. Lobbying is just legalized bribery. The fact that we have that in America and sort of accept it as normal is insanity. People are talking about how lobbying is, oh, it's fine. You know, in the theory, actually, the concept of lobbying, the way it was set up was that, you know, years ago, these guys that were in government would live in their home districts, and then they would travel to Washington, D.C., and they would stay there for like a month, and they would get all their work done, and then they would go back to living, you know, their normal lives in their normal districts and do all that stuff. They'd have interaction with their people, and they would then represent them and go to Washington to support their interests, at least in theory. But what happened with lobbying was that lobbying came along, and they said to these politicians, look, there's so much going on, you can't know it all. You can't be expected. It's unfair for us to think that you're going to know every aspect of all these different situations that have arisen. So what these lobbyists are going to do is they're going to represent certain issues, and they're going to bring it to the attention of the politicians. They're going to go to them and say, listen, I represent pharmaceutical industries, and these are the situations that we're facing right now. We want you to understand this, the plight of our pharmaceutical industry, and maybe help us out with that. And that became, you know, at its core, it became a way to educate the politician about what was happening in a variety of industries by having some people come to Washington and explain it to them. But it is mutated way past that. It has now turned into just a legalized form of bribery. You've got countless stories of lobbyists that have been, Jack Abramoff, of course, was one of them, you know, who's representing some diabolical people. And doing so in a way where he's funded by them, and he goes to Washington and he talks to these politicians and tries to get them to vote his way on a certain piece of legislation that might impact their industry. Well, that's the old way. The new way is that the lobbyists write the legislation themselves. They write all that stuff, all that pharmaceutical stuff that's written. You think Bernie Sanders is writing it? No, he's not. You think that Chuck Schumer is getting his, you know, getting down to the nitty gritty about all this pharmacy? No, that stuff is written for them. They're handed it. And then what happens when these politicians leave office? They get a job, a consulting gig with Merck or Pfizer, where they get to go, you know, play golf with clients, 3 days a week and collect $600,000 a year to do stuff like that. And that is a reward for voting their way while they were in Congress. This is how it works. This is the way that the government system is set up. So, you know, elections, lobbying, gun control, these things all work together. There's more to the story. Don't let somebody tell you that gun control is a simple issue, that we need to pass more laws. There's hundreds of laws. There's literally hundreds of laws already on the books. We don't need more gun control laws. You know, we don't need them. If somebody is pushing for more gun control laws, I would say, how about once you guys work on enforcement of the existing laws first before you go adding more and more law? But that's not sexy. You can't run on that, you know? And these politicians want to go back, and when they run their campaigns, say, I was tough on guns. You know, I introduced this legislation, which the blah, 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 you know, and red flag laws. Oh, I put the red flag laws in place. You got to vote for me because I'm tough on crime. Really? You're tough on crime? I'm against gun violence. Really? You're against gun violence because of this legislation that you introduced. Did you vote to authorize Trump to get another $100 billion for the military? You did. Well, then you must not be against gun violence then, are you? You hypocritical scumbag. Welcome to America. If you're interested in finding out more about my book or me, you can go to my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Check me out on social media. And if you like this podcast, hey, do me a huge favor. Share it. Send it to your friends. Send it to your family. Post it on social media. Do whatever you can. It's the only way this information is going to get out. God forbid, nobody in the mainstream media is inviting me to go on their shows to talk about this stuff because I am a subversive person, and the government has probably put me on some sort of watch list. So help a brother out. Spread the word. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time.